Welcome again to State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for another of our weekly Tacky Talk podcasts. How are you doing, Tacky?
Doing all right, Joe. Good to see you for another week of doing so-called Tacky Talk.
Yep, here we are now in the month of June, and I remember last time we talked, it was the day before all the COVID restrictions pretty much would be lifted. Here we are a week later, and sure enough, it happened.
Yep, the governor also formally signed an order ending the state of emergency on June 15th this week. So everything is green light to continue on so-called phase four reopening when we have full vaccination. And other than requiring face coverings on the MBTA and healthcare settings and certain schools, I think people are going to attempt to try to get to a new normal.
I think so. I'm still seeing a lot of folks wearing face coverings like in the grocery stores, even out on the street still. So I think everybody's kind of going at their own pace. It's going to take a little while to get used, just like it took a little while to get used to wearing them. It's going to take a while to get used to not wearing them.
Oh, absolutely. I was at the Star Market last Saturday. I was actually pretty late on my shopping. There was a lot of people still wearing masks at Star Market. I was like, cool. I mean, I don't mind wearing my mask. Each store has posted their own mask policy, whether you want to wear one or not. And that's happening as well as small businesses. Channel 5 had a story about a couple of businesses that are still requiring face masks, are still not ready for indoor seating. And this has actually, again, come a problem that the governor created of people unawares of the change. People who do have indoor seating, outdoor seating, had planned for outdoor seating for the summer, had not really configured themselves for indoor seating. Again, people do have other health issues, whether yourself or your loved ones, and their safety is paramount to them. And having customers wear masks is not, from their standpoint, an overburden, as their employees also continue to wear masks for the safety of the customers. And I always remind folks, you know, you shouldn't criticize or be distracted by people to wear masks, whether it's the business or your fellow patrons or your neighbors. Because you don't know what's going on with the individual health issues. You don't know about the safety. And I fully expect things like hand sanitizers to continue to be at the front doors of many businesses. And people should take advantage of utilizing those hygiene issues. I do not want to see people stop good hygiene as a result of vaccination. If we become dirty again, I'll be very like, why? I mean, did we not learn from the past year with the value of cleanliness? So I do expect high sanitation levels will continue. In many businesses, and hopefully everyone in our homes, as well as when we go out. You know, I'm not saying we have to spray our entire body down with Clorox, but, you know, be mindful of the fact that, yeah, washing your hands before dinner, not a bad move, folks. You know,
turns out mom was right all along. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. I mean, as people know, I have always have a pocket of wipes in my hand. I have eczema, so I have to use skin-sensitive sanitizing. Which actually during pandemic was near impossible to find. Oh. So I goes back to just alcohol and watch my skin kind of take a beating. So soap and water actually works better in my case, oddly enough, when I'm trying to preserve oils on my skin so it doesn't start to fall apart. I'm hoping more of my favorite brand of sensitive skin sanitizing wipes become more available, you know, as we come more to a new norm pandemic.
Because yeah, it's a good point. The whole supply chain still hasn't fully rebounded, really.
No, again, it's globalization. As you probably have seen, the chip manufacturing industry can't keep up with demand. And cars are backlogged on manufacturing. They're sitting around missing parts as consumer electronics have taken over. And it turns out about 90% of all chip manufacturing is actually located in Taiwan. And chip manufacturing is not like an on-demand business. It's a long-term supply chain business. So, you know, as I kind of learned this stuff, you know, you order your chips, you know, 6 months to, you know, 16 months in advance of when you need them, and you're projecting out your sales. And obviously it's easy to go down to get, you know, reduced and get more. Because they always can redirect chips somewhere else. But the skyrocketing surge of chip demand, particularly in home electronics, you know, has resulted in the global chip shortage. And some countries are trying to figure out, like China trying to figure out how to make more chips at home. The problem, of course, is it's very capital intensive. It's cleaner than anywhere on the planet to do chip manufacturing. And then still then you still have to get the orders in and, you know, have a 16-month, sometimes 2-year lead time of what the order is going to look like. So it's rather involved. And a lot of our PPP is still being, you know, manufactured overseas as we're trying to figure out how to build our own more PPP factories here, whether it be needles or gloves. We need to create more medical supplies here. But again, you still have to build these plants in the United States, and that will take a little bit of time. And meanwhile, countries like Malaysia has shut down for 2 weeks to June 15th because of an outbreak, and they don't have enough vaccine. So give an example, I mean, only 10% of the workforce can go to car manufacturing and 60% of the workforce can go into essential services, including things like PPP. So I think like half the world's hospital latex rubber, I don't know what it is, but not the latex anymore, the sterile gloves, but come from places like Malaysia. And China, you know, exports is largely now, you know, PPP oriented as they've always been. And you know, a lot of masks will not come out. So, I mean, as you know, we continue to go through reopening, and especially in Massachusetts and New England, we're ahead of the game in the rest of the country. When it comes to vaccinations and safety, most of the world is still struggling to get there. And, you know, this country, we have 3, you know, biotech companies, 4 coming up with vaccine. Are we going to have a likely FDA-approved vaccine, I suspect, by the fall, fully approved, at least Pfizer and Moderna. You know, even though they do have out-of-state, out-of-country manufacturing, a lot of manufacturing is inside Massachusetts. Not all of it, but a lot of it. And give us the edge. And, of course, we're still the biggest economic power in the world. And we buy a lot of vaccine. You know, and at the front of the line, at the expense of other first world countries and even second and third world countries. But thankfully, the second and third world countries may not be able to afford vaccine. And this is a huge, not just health issue, but a national, you know, global national security issue for us.
We are starting to participate, I guess, in vaccine diplomacy with other countries through the federal government in a small way. Interesting to see if that will ramp up.
Well, 25 million shots has been announced by the Biden administration. We bought 4 times the amount of vaccine we actually need for the U.S. population. These things have a shelf life. So the last thing you want is, you know, vaccines expiring. It's a waste. And a lot of taxpayer money went to these vaccines. And people ask why we overbought. It's very simple. We didn't know which company was going to have a successful vaccine. So we hedged our bets on every U.S. company that was manufacturing that they will have a success. And we did the hat trick, for the lack of a better term, on success rate. And we have committed to buy them all. But the alternative, of course, was that maybe 2 out of 3 would have failed. Mm-hmm. Or maybe all 3 would have failed or some combination. We would be, you know, in deep trouble, not being first in line for a vaccine. So, you know, we drew the hat trick. And we're probably even going to draw more of that with some new technology coming along this summer and winter. So we're going to have 4, maybe, you know, even higher amount of vaccine than the entire U.S. population. And, you know, we also prepared to buy so much as also booster shots, if booster shots can be required down the road.
Right.
So a lot of taxpayer dollars has been invested in our livelihood and our health. And as a result, you know, sending out 25 million in vaccine globally, and I suspect even more will be going down the pike when we go down late summer. To adhere and improve our foreign relations with many parts of the world where China and Russia are actively trying to curry favor with these other countries. It is, again, a national security interest of ours to ensure that we continue to keep our friends close to us on a global level. And we have adopted the position of put your mask on first in the airplane before putting mask on others. Canada, we've talked about before, are one of our central partners, both economically and national security, and our friends north as well as Mexico needs vaccine. Meanwhile, you know, countries like China had, you know, put a lot of vaccine in South America and Africa and in Southeast Asia. However, you know, they are now trying to vaccinate an average of 14 million people a day in a 1.4 billion person country. They can't meet demand. Their Sinovac vaccine is more labor intensive and time consuming than the mRNA vaccines of Pfizer and Moderna, which is basically just churning it out like mad. So, you know, there is a, on an international level for the purpose of diplomacy and national security, there is now an opening for the U.S. to, under the Biden administration, to increase diplomacy through vaccinations.
Let's talk a little bit about our own backyard here. Jackie, what's happening at the State House this week?
Now, this week has been fairly quiet. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Memorial Day week, holiday weeks tend to be quiet. So, you know, as we go into July 4th week, it'll be very quiet as well. I do suspect we'll probably be in session next week to override the governor's veto of the project labor agreement that was part of this Holyoke Soldier Home and looking at building other soldier homes around it, around the state. So we'll probably be in for that next week to do an override. I haven't got the calendar yet. I won't get the calendar until 4 p.m. today. Today is Friday. They don't give us a calendar too late in the afternoon. But you know, we'll formalize that if we were in session next week, and we'll be doing it via teleconference. You know, I'm holding a public hearing on Monday at 11 a.m. on the committee level to review the governor's reorganization plan. He's looking to move some boards out of the Division of Professional Licensure into a new entity called the Division of Occupational Licensing to be put under the Department of Public Health. And these are agencies, actually more boards, actually, that oversee more medically related type situations, such as chiropractors, podiatrists, and so forth. So, you know, we're going to review that. And under Article 87 of the Constitution is what he filed, which means the legislature has 60 days from time of filing, actually, you know, admittance of the bill to committee to take action, or it becomes law automatically. The committee only has 10 days after the public hearing to issue a positive or negative report. I can't amend a governor's Article 87 bill. I only can give a positive or negative. And, you know, I'm going to stay within the 30-day window of when it was admitted to committee. So, obviously, we're working in the Speaker's office, my co-chair, Sue Moran, Senator Moran, and committee staff, as well as talking to the administration this whole week about, you know, what's going on here, why we're doing it, you know, what's the fiscal impact and so forth. And talking now, I just saw my phone pop up that Commissioner D'Amelia from Division of Professional Licensure is looking for me. So literally as I'm talking to you, I can see my phone in front of me, people popping up, hunting me down.
They're going to have to wait until we're done. I'm sorry.
We are his priorities, Joe, and you're my friend.
Thank you.
So, but I mean, give you an idea of how people try to literally hunt me down in the middle of this. And I just saw like three more text messages in front of me pop up as well. So, yeah, that's our hearing. And then the DPO has also filed an enforcement bill. They want to update their enforcement laws. We haven't had an update in many years. So it's a good opportunity to do a lot of technical changes, you know, review the powers of enforcement, review about how they do query checks, which is a big part of our conversation over the last 2 years regarding the Sex Offender Registry Board and how to do review and criminal backgrounds. And there may be some opportunities on technical corrections, working with the Division of Professional Licensure, some technical corrections to update some boards to reflect modern educational standards, for example. So that's going to be a longer project as we look forward. But, you know, the governor has filed an enforcement bill. So as you guys don't really realize that when governor does these kind of things, my entire hearing schedule is now blown up again.
Yeah,
we've been looking towards a schedule for a hearing every Monday through June and July, and maybe two if we're running behind on moving out bills as we then prepare a fall schedule. But when the governor files these bills, you know, we had to reshift our prioritization of public hearings. So, you know, I get a lot of folks asking, oh, we're going to hear this, we're going to hear that. Well, I don't know now because my schedule's been blown up.
Okay.
And now the staff and I are back trying to figure out how to divvy up the bills for a virtual style public hearing has shifted out 2 weeks.
It's the legislative process, right? It's lengthy and time consuming.
It's more scheduling than I think people realize.
Yeah.
As people have interacted with me over the decade, I mean, my life scheduling it can be very challenging. Like I said, there's a reason why you sometimes catch me at the dry cleaner midweek, or I'm trying to grab my prescriptions at CVS midweek, or odd hours of the day you find me at the market. Sometimes in full suit as I'm trying to get from point A to point B,
right.
Even a pandemic virtual calls. I mean, I've done quite a few evening presentations. For example, I did one for Brandeis University regarding social justice and lawyering. Well, that was a 2-hour conversation at night. So, you know, just because I'm not, you know, physically with people still, you know, the virtual stuff is here to stay.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I think you're right. Absolutely. Has the citizen review panel been established from the police reform bill, Zaki? Is that up and running now?
I believe they're still waiting for some appointments. A lot of the police reform special commission stuff in the back is a little bit vague on timeline of appointments and who's actually going to chair these things. So I believe the citizen one should be nearly, if not fully appointed at this stage. I've not received a public notice yet about their first public hearing.
Right.
I do know the Civil Service Review Board has been formalized. Some stuff like cybersecurity-ish type stuff, you know, facial recognition, that kind of thing, has not been formalized yet. There's still some people going to find a non-legislative appointments. A lot of these boards and commissions are not legislators on things, but there are appointments still being waiting to be made. So, you know, some of these are not legislatively run, which means that their public notice is probably going to have to come through the governor's office.
Okay. All right. Speaking of cybersecurity, what do you think about these ransomware attacks that seem to be ramping up recently?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me that someone on this call may have heard or been a victim of some kind of ransomware attack on a small level. So what is not uncommon in people's homes, unfortunately, is that you open something you shouldn't have opened and downloaded it and proceeded to install ransomware. And then you would tell you to call somebody, and you know, you have to give them, you know, $100, $500, $1,000 or whatever for them to unlock your phone. And there's also a situation where there were scam calls where people call you randomly, inform you that they're from a technology company and your computer has been compromised, and tell you to go to this website, download software, which turns out to be ransomware. And on the phone, they literally tell you to pay up.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a scam, folks. If you have a tech call, even if you've made a tech call looking for tech support, you need to verify that this is actually the company that called you, not some made up company, and never name the company on the phone who you call, because they'll just pick up on that. So now we've moved on from these kind of smaller scams, you know, over the course of the last, actually been going well into 15 years now, that type of scam, to big scale hacking. And I think everybody's seen on news already about big hacking in our elections, big hacking on government agencies. But now they've really moved into the vulnerabilities of our supply chain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and Colonial Gas and the meat packing company is beyond, you know, my own state government. People still try to hack us on state government.
Sure. Well, the Registry of Motor Vehicles was hacked not too long ago. Sure. Yeah.
And yeah, who knows how much data was taken from there.
Right.
I can't access my state account from VPN, for example. Needs verified IP addresses. I cannot get email from certain countries.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the Chinese government cannot email me from a Chinese account. They have to use Gmail to contact me, which is kind of funny, actually, when you think about the fact they banned Gmail in China.
Right.
You can't get Google in any way, shape, or form in that country, which I find kind of ironic that the constantly uses Gmail. And, you know, other countries, you know, I've talked to people like Taiwan, they have upped their cybersecurity game, even domestically, regarding video calls.
Hmm.
You know, they want encrypted calls for things they consider sensitive. Yeah. So, I mean, I think people should be extremely concerned about private entities, not government, oddly enough. Private entities that is not financial, that is not telecom, that is vulnerable in our supply chain. And Colonial Gas is probably the best example. I've been in power plants in my younger days, and they are cut off from the internet. So your gas-fired energy generator does not have internet connection to their main systems. So they can't get ransomware to shut down a power plant. I do not know about renewable power. There actually is a good question about renewable power and whether or not they can be hacked, or they do have a closed system where nobody can get into their any generation monitoring and releasing of power. But clearly, you know, gas, oil, and other types of supply, a fuel supply, you know, is vulnerable to cyber attack. And these are privately owned companies. And like I said, they're not the historical targets, which is banks, credit card transaction companies, telecom industry. You know, historically are the ones that people like to get information from. But this is also different. This isn't like a hack to get information in terms of like identity theft.
Right.
This is a hack to shut things down in exchange for ransom.
Right. Yeah. And it's very effective.
Well, they had to pay. You know, they had to pay, turn the system off, had to pay, and it turns out the fix was not a quick fix. They did so much damage that the repair of software that was sent to them after the payment was a slow return. And I would tell the public to fully expect more of this cyber attacks on big privately owned corporations that are essential to our supply chain. You'd be surprised what is in our supply chain. For example, they could hack, you know, all the cardboard companies, for example, and screw up shipping. You saw them do this to the Steamship Authority already that long ago on transportation. That's another privately, it's a quasi-public company, but it's a private company in the end. You know, could they hack things like the NBTA and, you know, and Massport? You know, can they get at, for example, FedEx? Imagine if they got to FedEx and ransomware FedEx. You know, you would have a huge supply chain shutdown.
Well, I mean, a lot of the vaccine is being transported through FedEx, so sure, yeah.
Yeah, and if they can't track where things have to go, or you know, you can't put an order in, we have some, you know, major problems that is probably, you know, very equivalent to a national emergency if that happens. So, you know, obviously a lot of these companies have a lot of money. And, you know, when I talk to guys like Verizon, you know, they spend hundreds of millions of dollars annually on cybersecurity. Well, these major corporations are really going to have to think about where they're going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars annually on cybersecurity, and they're probably going to have to.
Speaking of hundreds of millions of dollars, Massachusetts is getting $5.3 billion from the federal government. What are we going to do with it?
Well, it's always good to see money, right?
Yes.
And as you've seen in the newspapers and IQA TV and all kinds of media, you know, the federal delegation is joined a victory run, so to speak, on getting us a lot of money, not just at the state level, but also the municipalities. Basically got a free check. As we talked, there's no such thing as a free lunch, but apparently there is now. Just saying. So I was expecting, and we were told to expect, to have the federal government disbursement over the course of two fiscal years. So we figured it'd be a half and half situation. Instead, Massachusetts is one of the few states that got a lump sum disbursement. So Speaker Mariano, Senate President Spilka, had agreed that we should put that money in essentially a special trust fund last week to keep it out of the hands of the governor and have the legislature actually have a say on what to do. Now, last time we did the major stimulus package, the state got $1 billion and some extra change for basically trying to fill a budget hole and address COVID, and some money went to mass health, Medicare, Medicaid. The feds put a lot of money into that. The feds put money, for example, the feds gave us money to go into K through 12 COVID readiness. They gave money for higher education. There was a lot of things I think the public didn't realize how much the feds put into a lot of essential safety net programs to try to keep certain parts of our economy moving. And of course, local level COVID safety. So, you know, Quincy and many communities got a lot of COVID money last year to offset potential losses in tax revenue, as well as additional costs from COVID. And that disbursement went straight into the fall. But all that money really went straight to the governor's office. We never really got to see any of that money in the legislature level, so we didn't get the ability to appropriate. And part of last year's budget was balanced on $500 million of unused COVID money, which, you know, quite frankly, we actually had to ensure that the government did not spend, and we just basically appropriated ourselves and balanced last year's budget. So that's why the budget, you know, a number of reasons why we didn't have this budget crisis as bad as it could have been, and part of it is the fact that the federal government really stepped up last time on pandemic, chaos, emergency, you know, oh my God, the sky is falling, we need to do something fast money.
Right.
And, you know, we're very thankful for that. I don't think the public realized exactly how much everything from, you know, SNAP assistance to fuel assistance, all the way to having more safety protocols in your public schools, was federally funded.
I don't think a lot of wage protection happened as well, I know. So, yeah.
Yeah, eviction protection, wage protection, stuff regarding student loans. I don't think people appreciate exactly how much the feds were involved on keeping us from having to do draconian cuts or raising taxes, prevented those two things from happening. So now we have a new disbursement. Unlike cities and towns, the state has more guidelines. I do not know what those guidelines are. Things like transportation, infrastructure, education. I know the pooled money. It's not like one pot of free money. It's divvied up to a whole lot of other programs the state operates. So we're going to have to figure it out as we go along, and how much flexibility does legislators have in redirecting funds, for example, back to Quincy. How much can I redirect back to Quincy, if at all, and how much has to stay in the larger programming of the state? So we don't know yet, but we do believe that this is our best interest, especially our experience during the first wave, that the legislature should have a say on how these federal disbursements go. On a municipal level, I'll answer all your question about that one because I already got a few of those. No, I do not have a say on how the mayor spends his money.
Okay.
Let's just put that right out there. The city got $46 million in COVID assistance. If the city council wants to try to do what we did and try to see if they can legally, I don't know if they can legally, it may not, may yes, may no, try to put some of that money into a special trust for further conversation. That's, of course, up to the city council. But we know the city council can't appropriate. They can only cut.
Right.
So I do not know if they can move money into a trust, but, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. Let's see if, you know, municipalities want to move that route between the legislative and executive branch conversation. And in small towns, you have town administrators, and you have places like Cambridge, you have city administrators. So, you know, those selectmen and those city councils, you know, will have to figure out how they're going to have conversations with their town manager, town administrator, or city managers about how they're going to handle those COVID monies and who's actually in charge of dispersing.
So, but the state legislature can put it in a trust, or is there like a power struggle going on here between the executive? There is a power struggle.
Yeah, fully expect a power struggle, folks.
Okay.
This is the legislative branch trying to reassert itself as we come into the post-pandemic new norm to create even more accountability than we were trying to do during the height of the pandemic.
Okay, interesting. Also, I was curious to read, I know we've talked about this before, but what's the status of the film industry tax credit, Jackie?
Well, it's right now still sitting in conference committee, the budget. Okay. Obviously, the House wants to maintain the status quo. They want to make it permanent. Senate has increased certain requirements. For example, they want 75% of all the cost production to be in Massachusetts as opposed to 50%, and they want to do some caps on salaries. One of the issues that come up, and I kind of keep reminding folks that this is not just about the major motion pictures, but these are about indie productions, the small productions that are often less than $500,000, even smaller. The tax credits help those little $100,000, $250,000 small films to be made in Massachusetts. And these are the things that go to the Cannes and even few festivals, the Farnborough Film Festival and other places that could become, you know, major motion pictures as you see at the Oscars. But we need to have a place for this to flourish. And given the film industry in our major universities, such as Emerson College and BU, you know, this is a place we want to keep, you know, people to graduate from those schools to make films here to start their careers and be part of our local economy. The Senate puts all that at risk. And this is kind of lost in the conversation about, you know, voiceover work, TV commercials, training videos. You know, it's not just the big pictures. Even though the big pictures make a majority of the money spent here, you still have all these other smaller projects. But if we don't do that here, they're going to go to places, you know, like, again, Georgia, to make these independent films. Lower cost of living down there, as well as lower cost of doing business, plus more favorable tax credits will result in a lot of people taking their money and going someplace else. So the Senate has really put us at risk, not necessarily just for the major motion pictures, but also these small productions and keeping the local economy. You know, the film industry is actually not really part of our tourism industry. No one really noticed exactly how much money they've invested and in continue to invest in Massachusetts till we lost all our tourism as a result of COVID.
Yes, that, yeah, it comes down to a simple math equation. Is it bringing in more money than it's costing?
Yeah, I mean, they've bought, rented, you know, tens of thousands of hotel rooms, you know, throughout 2020. And they will continue to 2021. And, you know, we actually got surprised because we didn't know they were doing another season of Dexter. The Berkshires shot pretty much almost all in the Berkshires. And, you know, that was a place that was having, you know, again, economic problems. And people don't realize that the Berkshires had serious COVID outbreaks too, despite the fact it's a very sparse area.
Yes. Yeah. A lot of small rural towns and some of the older former mill towns out there had some real issues with it, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously live in the most dense urban area of Massachusetts on the east side. And we don't always, you know, realize there's a world beyond where we are. But yeah, no, those rural areas really took a huge economic hit because the, you know, start of summer also hurt them, as well as COVID outbreaks, and healthcare is more sparse out there. And the contact tracing is much more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have a great telecom system. I know for a fact that the landlines are ancient. And if you guys try to ever go out there, and cell phone service can be pretty spotty. So, you know, essential services out in Western Mass is very, very different once you live in dense urban areas. And films like Dexter, shows like Dexter are pretty important to a local economy. It's new infusion of money. And given the fact that everyone in the state had to take a tourism hit last year, and they'll take another tourism hit this year, despite, you know, I know the Cape is booked out,
yeah,
but there's more places to visit in Massachusetts that tourism dependent beyond the Cape.
Sure.
They're going to continue to take big hits. And the film industry is contracted out here to at least 2024 of some movies. So I know not every industry is going to feel the benefit, but you know, there'll be, you know, quite a few sectors that, you know, will get some help economically through the industry.
Talk a little bit, if you can, Jackie, about how AAPI month went now that we're past May.
Well, it's great to have people support our local businesses. We saw quite a bit of social media on this, and actually had some people ask me questions about some places I visited, and hopefully you will visit some of the places you see in my Facebook. Obviously, it's not saying you should only visit those places, but for example, my dry cleaner on Greenwood down in Wollaston across from the T, you know, she reminded me there was four dry cleaners in Wollaston Center. Now there's only two, and she's trying to hang on.
Hmm.
So, you know, I brought my suits, what few suits I wore, and my winter coats to have them dry clean. I'm now trying to figure out what I need sold and trying to help her out with a bit of business.
Yeah.
These guys, like a lot of businesses, want to work. They're not interested in handouts. And even PPP and all that, you know, is a lifeline, but it doesn't replace basic business. It just puts them on barely life support. And people understand that their landlords need money too, beyond them, and we don't want local landlords losing tenants, because it means they'll go out of business also.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, there's a lot of business out there. Quincy is a very heavy AAPI city on business. Yep. And you know, again, you know, all of them have different health standards too. And if you want to help our economy, if you really want to help our economy, you know, please follow the instruction of the businesses you visit, so you can help to keep them alive. This ain't about you. This is about all of us. And if you want to help keep our economy alive, please obey what the businesses ask you to do when you walk in. You know, you can always do takeout, whatnot, but mm-hmm. you know, tips are valuable to workers. And I didn't do a whole lot of takeout, I'll be honest. But whenever I did, you know, I was still giving like 30% tips.
Right.
You know, to try to help them out, because thankfully, you know, I do have a job. Thank you to the voters, I do have a job. But I mean, I think everyone can if you can, do your part. So, you know, there's been great awareness. We did a forum this week with McDonald's, highlighting business entrepreneurs and the challenges of running a business. So even though we're out of May, we are going to continue forums at the state house level and educational. The House Asian Caucus enjoyed putting them together, as well as members and staff of the state house found it very informational. And right now we're trying to put another one together with another law firm, perhaps late June or early July, for another part of the business community. It began to be a webinar format, which again, this is here to stay. It brings a lot of good attendance. You know, I think there'll be another. I did a social justice issue of Brandeis last Monday night. There's some studies going on about foundational giving from people of color, as well as donations from foundations to people of color. There's actually an active study going on about that I've been monitoring and participating in the conversation. The Quincy Sun had a nice article with me last week, going to Memorial Day, so it was last week's Sun, about racism and how I perceive the matter. And a little bit of what I've been doing in my day job, which, you know, it's great insight, just like this forum here, you know, gives people a little bit of insight on what my life is like doing this gig. So I hope the conversation on AIP issues do not stop. I do hope they continue despite the fact May is over. You know, we still have some concerns, like the Dragon Boat Festival which we actually write about next week, is not going to happen, obviously. I talked about this before. It's the only Dragon Boat Festival outside of Hong Kong. And it's the longest running Dragon Boat Festival outside of Hong Kong. And, you know, that's a huge cultural event that's gone. And, you know, in some local groups like, you know, Korean American Citizen League of New England would have invited me down to their annual dinner and the intern scholarship ceremony. That didn't happen. You know, the Cambodian Water Festival, Southeast Asian Water Festival in Lowell is kind of a question mark. Can they pull it off? Obviously in Quincy, we didn't have a New Year's, or we're not going to be able to do August Moon with Quincy Asian Resources. It's not enough time to put one together. It is very labor intensive to put these events together at such a large scale. So, I mean, I attend a lot of events with AIP outside of Quincy, and you know, it just didn't happen. And also revenue generators for those organizations.
Yes. Yeah. Do you worry about an increase in anti-Asian violence given the discussion about the origins of COVID-19?
Yeah, I still believe that's going to be a major problem. You know, there was an attack on a Chinese grandma this week, actually. It didn't make the mainstream papers. It actually was a citizen reporter via social media. And I'm still not sure what happened there. You know, we don't know if it's a hate crime. There's so little details going on. I do understand that everything's a hate crime. It is told, you know, based on the circumstances of the incident to find out what the motive is. But I mean, you know, unprovoked attacks are still occurring around the country. I think it's kind of waned off the news a little bit. You really do have to do some web searching. It would be largely social media driven to find some of these, as well as citizen reporters. That's not mainstream. But you're going to find it's still going to continue in dense areas. And China's inability to cooperate with the World Health Organization has not improved people's perception of the country, which then trickles down to people's perception of people who look like me.
Right.
And that's troubling. And the Indian variant, now a Vietnamese variant, there's two new variants, and a Vietnamese variant, you know, may have also negative repercussions against the Indian and Vietnamese communities down the road as well. I do have concerns about people's perceptions and about how this stuff works. And, you know, I always love the term, you know, it's, you know, we don't like them, but we like you. I'm like, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense in many ways. So, you know, it's, we'll see how it plays. But, you know, I continue to believe that, you know, the discrimination, the spitting, the shoving, and so forth, and people being violently attacked around the U.S. Will continue right into 2022.
Unfortunate, to say the least. And, you know, hopefully we'll make strides here, at least locally, against that.
Well, that's what I hope. There's greater awareness by municipal entities to, you know, raise police awareness, you know, raise municipal awareness, you know, passing even resolutions on a local level about things like this, stopping. The Biden administration has put out a release indicating they are going to have heightened awareness in the Justice Department and try to move forward on policies like data disaggregation, which I've been talking about for many years now, as well as greater participation with the federal government and boards and commissions and whatnot, you know, all those type of things. And, you know, we've been reached out by the governor as well regarding more diversity on the state's board and commissions. And again, talk about public policies that affect people of color. We want to be a participant. And some things will be specifically AIPI, but some things will affect all of us beyond just AIPI. So again, you know, I'm always fighting to get in the line so I can get to the table. It's good to see that the federal government and the state government, you know, making some strides. And I hope municipal governments will also follow that example.
Right. Curious, Taki, this, so the state of emergency is still in existence till June 15th. So what basically is still the emergency? Do you know what procedures are still in place because of that?
Well, once the governor's state of emergency powers end, all his executive orders that suspended many of our laws also ends.
Okay.
The governor filed a bill to extend outdoor dining, which was done in this non-public process. I don't think people realize it was pretty much no public process when we established outdoor dining. The governor suspended all the public process laws. There's still a continuation about public hearings in a video format or some hybrid. It's not just city councils and selectmen, but also quasi-public agencies like Division of Professional Legislature oversee, you know, our public hearing boards of registration. There's been benefiting from suspension of law regarding that. And then we also have COVID a consumer awareness. And I think that's actually something we should look at making more permanent. But COVID scams, improper billing by healthcare, I think some people, you know, are being billed, they shouldn't have been billed, and things like that. So, I mean, that legislature would take a greater look at those three topics. The governor filed a bill in the Senate. The bill went to Senate Ways and Means. The Senate is going to go first in that conversation.
Okay.
The House is going second. I know conversations going on in the Speaker's office and leadership teams, and I will be somehow involved in that conversation, given my role as Consumer Protection and Professional Licensure Chair.
Right.
And what I think we should be doing. So, you know, that conversation is going on. The question is how much time we got. June 15th is not far away. And to try to pop a bill, even just a temporary extension of the current status quo,
we're
trying to think of what should be a permanent solution. We really need to get that done quickly.
Yeah, all right. We will look forward to that and look forward to our next time chatting. But in the meantime, many ways to reach out to you.
As always, you know, you can reach out at 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. Smash a button, get to a staff and leave a voicemail. You get a voicemail, email to us. But that is kind of the only delay. We emailed over to us. And you can email me at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. I will try to find your email. There's so much email right now. As they try to differentiate testimony away from my email account, turns out that wasn't going to happen. So I'm collecting people's testimonies going to the next set of public hearings, as well as trying to locate your emails. We do prioritize need first. I mean, I am receiving all kinds of policy-oriented emails, but I continue to receive a lot of unemployment, distant requests, as well as now moving into like the summer months, so-called potholes and tree trimmings, right? I'm getting the same type of requests as we head into the warm months. My Facebook page is staterepresentativetackychan.com. We do post some graphics, information about things going on in my life and events, as well as useful information that you may be able to use at home. And of course, I post a lot of articles and such that, you know, please take a read. And then tackychan.org, we do keep a lot of phone numbers there of human services that you should, or human service organizations in particular locally that, you know, you can contact or would actually have to go through me to get a phone number. So, you know, many resources available. We try to keep up as best we can. I do admit that we're a little behind posting your QATV stuff on my website. So I looked the other day, we're a little bit behind. But, you know, we try to keep up. I mean, I still got a Twitter page. But for the love of people, do not reach out to me via social media. I have far too many places to look at the same time. So email, phone is still the best way to get back.
Okay. And between now and next time we talk, there'll be high school graduations here in Quincy, and there'll be the Flag Day celebration too.
Yep, I mean, it's coming back to normal. Quincy High, North Quincy High, congratulations to everyone and having us to be in the ceremony. I suspect it'd be something that was social distancing, particularly for those on the platform. And the Flag Day, it was a trimmed down Flag Day, but, you know, good weather and a chance to get outside and say hello to folks, even if it's from a distance. And, you know, there'll be other events going on outdoors. I understand the House Net Family Fund Day on July 3rd. They're trying to see if they can put that together. It probably will happen. But also July 4th is a long weekend. I also suspect people will not be in Quincy for that long weekend. I probably will be here because, you know, me. But everybody else, I suspect, will be people being on the road.
Yeah. And in-person Pride Day coming up on Sunday at Pageant Field for Pride Month. So lots going on,
Pride Month's going on. And, you know, we just did Memorial Day services this past Monday. You know, it was in person. It was the rain was pretty rough in the terms of how cold it was, and more shocking was the cold than the rain in the early morning. You know, it was great to see people that I haven't looked at in well over a year. That was nice. And the flip side, you know, the sad part about this is on the flip side, you now notice who you lost.
Yeah.
When you go to these events, you see faces that aren't there right now. And that's also, for me personally, very saddening. And it's a very sober moment because, you know, while I know people have passed this pandemic, some from COVID, some not, the inability to kind of like see their family, you know, I've been mailing a lot of condolence cards out. and you know, see their family, you know, have some closure. It's different when you expect them to be a locale, even looking at them being there, in my case, well past 20, 25 years of going to different things before I was elected. You know, their absence, it's really felt.
It makes it real. Yeah, absolutely. Good to see you, Tacky. Appreciate it as always.
Always good talk to you. I'll see you soon.
All right. Be well.